Okay, shalom to everybody. We're on. Today we're going to learn Rav Kook's commentary on the continuation of the Gemara. Last time we saw the story of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who spoke against the Romans, that even the good that they did, they really did for selfish, self-centered, physical, hedonistic reasons. The bathhouses that they built and the bridges. And the Romans heard about this and put out a contract on his head. And he went to hide with his son together in the Beit Midrash. And we learned about last time about that short period when he was in the Beit Midrash. And then the Gemara says that when they heard, he heard that the Romans were on his tail and that his wife, who used to bring him food, they might catch her and torture her and she might reveal where they're hiding. So the Gemara says, and now we're in source number one. Put on the share screen. Here we go. Here. Azlu tashu bama'arta. So they went and they hid in a cave. Itrachish nisa. Hashem made a miracle. Ibrilu charuva ve'ina demaya. And they revealed, miraculously, a carob tree and a spring of water with for which they lived for 13 years on that water and carobs. Ve'havu meshalchu manayhu. They would take off their clothes and put them on the sides. Ve'havu yatvu ad savarayu bechala. And they would sit up to their neck in sand, kule yomi garsa, all day they would learn Torah, and then when it came time to daven, to pray three times a day, they would put on their clothing. In other words, they kept their clothing. They didn't know how long they were going to be in the cave, and they kept their clothing in honor of prayer. So during the day, they were covered up to their neck in sand. The Gemara tells afterwards of how their skin suffered, and they had serious health problems as a result. But here, Rav Kook is going to deal with several questions. Number one, what is the symbolism of a carob tree? Question number two, why does the Gemara have to give us the details of this story that during the day they would sit up to their neck in sand and be without their clothing and just put it on for tefillot? Okay, so maybe we learn from here the importance of dressing special when we pray to God. But as far as the story is concerned, what's the message? Question number three. The continuation of the story is that after 12 years, they overheard somebody say, it says that it's Elijah the prophet, say that the Caesar has died, and who will tell Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai that he can leave the cave? He leaves the cave, and he sees a man plowing and planting. And Rabbi Shimon turns to his son and he says, what a waste of time. How could these people leave the eternal world of Torah and deal with the temporal, secular, physical world, which is just for this world? And they were so angry that everything they looked at went up in flames. And the plant went up in flames, and the field went up in flames. And like all Midrashim, we don't know how much of this to take literally or not, but a voice came out from heaven, a bat kol, telling him, "Lachriv olami yatzatim? Have you left the cave to destroy my world?" said God. "Go back to the cave. Who needs you?" And they go back to the cave. And after another 12 months, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says to God, he says, "Even if our punishment were hell, hell only lasts for 12 months. In other words, 12 months are up. Can we leave now?" And then they left. And this time, even though his son, Rabbi Elazar, continued burning things up from the physical world, Rabbi Shimon stopped burning them, and everything that his son destroyed, he healed. That's the end of the story. And the question is, what is the symbolism of that burning up of everything physical? And not only that, apparently this story seems, and the actions of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai seem to contradict the derech of Rav Kook, which is to reveal the holy in the secular. And here we see Rabbi Shimon separating himself from the physical world. And the question is, how does that fit in with Rav Kook's philosophy? And Bichlal, Judaism's philosophy, is that we are not supposed to separate from the physical world. And we spoke last week about how Moshe Rabbeinu, how did he separate from his wife? All right, there's an obligation to be married, an obligation to raise a family. And we are definitely not like the Catholics who say that you should swear on chastity, poverty, and obedience. So if so, why is Moshe Rabbeinu and here Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai making an ideology out of separating themselves from the physical world? Now, I'll already point out that Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, in his time, did not want to publicize in Ayah, the book that we're reading, because he made a very, Rav Kook's son made a very big differentiation between Rav Kook's writings in Chutz La'aretz and those which he wrote in Eretz Yisrael. And what we're going to see today is an example where you see a taste of how Rav Kook was still connected to the Galuti Torah and did have a certain respect for Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that there is a time and a place to separate yourself from the physical world. Maybe let's already jump to the end, where we'll see Rav Kook's later Hashkafa in source number 6. Rav Kook writes, deals exactly with this phenomena. Lifamim omnam anu roim shba'alei haruchaniyut, tzadikei hador. Sometimes we see the greatest righteous people of a generation, notim lenezirut uprishut, who go to an extreme and separate themselves from physical pleasure. Umoasim b'chomriyut, and they're even disgusted with the physical world, just like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Aval, says Rav Kook, zeu siman sheba kilkul ba'olam. This is a sign that the world is corrupt. The world is crooked. Uchedei litrapot min hakilkul, the way to heal a person when he is sick, or when the world is sick, sometimes you have to taste bitter medicine. A healthy person does not need to take bitter medicine. He doesn't need to take drastic steps. He doesn't need shock treatment. And what Rav Kook is saying is that this approach of certain righteous people that were always fasting 40 consecutive fasts, or this time of year, many people fast Shovavim every Monday and Thursday, and Monday and Thursday. Rav Kook is saying that is for when the world is sick. Because a healthy world and healthy tzaddikim do not need to take this approach. Mashal natnu ha-mekubali mikdushat ha-shabbat u-kdushat yom ha-kippurim. The Kabbalists gave an example comparing the holiness of Shabbat and the holiness of Yom Kippur. Kedushat Shabbat gedula mikedushat Yom Kippurim. We know that halachically the holiness of Shabbat is more holy than Yom Kippur. If somebody desecrates Yom Kippur, he's chayav karet. But if he desecrates the Shabbat, he's chayav skila. That's a more severe punishment. If so, the holiness of Shabbat is more holy than Yom Kippur. ובכל זאת מצווה לאכול ולשתות בשבת ולהתענג בחיים, והיא תדירה. 2 points. Rav Kook is saying that Shabbat, which is a day where we eat and drink and enjoy physical pleasure, That is on a higher level than Yom Kippur, where we fast and we pretend that we're angels. That's number one. Number two, Shabbat is Tadir. Shabbat is 52 times a year. 51, 52 times a year. Yom Kippur is only once a year, which means that Shabbat is another reason why it's more important. We always say Tadir v'sheino Tadir, Tadir Kodem. If a person has to make two brachot, and one is a bracha which you make once a day, or once a month, or just on Shabbat, and another bracha is a bracha that you make all the time, then you make the bracha that you say more often. For example, in Birkat HaMazon, in benching, where we add Ritzevach Litzenu, and on Rosh Chodesh, Yale V'Yavo, what do we do on Shabbat Rosh Chodesh? We say the Ritzev for Shabbat before we say the Yale V'Yavo for Rosh Chodesh, because that which is more common is on a higher level. So we see two halachic reasons that Shabbat is on a higher level than Yom Kippur. And it's davka because we eat and we drink and we have physical pleasure on Shabbat. Ulehefech, Yom Kippurim kedushato pchuta mikdushat haShabbat. Yom Kippur is on a lower level. Ve'asur le'chol bo litaneg. And that's why physical pleasure is forbidden on Yom Kippur. That is part of a lower level. So Rav Kook is saying that a higher level of righteous people are those who reveal holiness and godliness in the physical work, like on the physical world, like Shabbat, which is on a higher level than separating yourselves like Yom Kippur. Continues Rav Kook, Mipnei shehu ba lechaper al chataim. Yom Kippur is shock treatment. Once a year, where chas v'shalom, if a person has a heart attack, you give him shock treatment, which maybe is good when you are really sick. But you can't live with that constant shock. And that's why Shabbat is every week. Yom Kippur is just once a year. Val kene no ba elapam bitkufa yidua. And also Yom Kippur just comes after Chodesh Elul, and after 10 days of Tshuva and Rosh Hashanah, and there is one Yom Kippur. By the way, we'll just finish off Rav Kook here. When we finish Yom Kippur, and our sins have been absolved, have been forgiven, אז הרוחניות והחומריות מתאחדים יחד. That is when the physical and the spiritual worlds unite, והעולם מתמלא חדווה ועונג זמן שמחתנו. That is the holiday of Sukkot. And maybe I'll just add, in a similar vein, what is the last halacha of the laws of Yom Kippur? Go build a sukkah. In other words, the end of Yom Kippur is start working on Sukkot. Start building and decorating and buy a beautiful lulav and etrog. Because the physical beauty, when used properly, is davka something holy. This is Rav Kook's hashkafa in Eretz Yisrael. We'll just see another line before we go back to Enaya. Rav Kook writes also regarding the Bikurim. V'halanu tzoadim, and we march forward. This is source number 7. Binyan ha'aretz, building the land of Israel. Hayesod ha'rashi, ha'chaklaut, and the highest level, the most basic aspect of working the land of Israel, settling the land of Israel, which is a mitzvah, is agriculture. Halohi etzel kola mimra gorem kalkali chiyuni pashut. All other nations look at agriculture as something economic. We need apples, we need cucumbers. Avala'am asher anoseh shelo kulohu kodosh kodoshim. But the nation of Israel, whose whole essence is to live a life of holiness, where even our agriculture is holy, and our cucumbers and apples are holy, ve'artso, our land is holy, Usfato, our language is the holy language. V'chol arachav kulam kodeshem. All of the ideas of the ideals of Israel are holiness. Remember, tahara, purity, is a lower level than holiness. Purity is when a person abstains from the physical world, like we'll see in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Kedusha is a higher level, where you reveal godliness even in the physical world. By the way, I'll mention parenthetically, maybe we mentioned this last time, what is the final stage of, you know, there are so many different stages. There's Yemot HaMashiach. There is the world to come. But the final stage is Tchiyat HaMetim. It is the revival of the dead, where the physical bodies come back to this world and live a spiritual life in the physical world, where the two don't contradict. So this is Rav Kook's Hashkafa in Eretz Yisrael. But what we're learning, he is writing in Chutz La'aretz, and here he is going to justify that there is a time and a place for the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's. We'll add that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai lived in the land of Israel, but it was a time where the Jewish people were not here. Most of the Jews were living in Babylon. The mitzvot tatliot ba'aretz, their agricultural mitzvot, are only derabanan. And when most of the Jews are not in the land of Israel, even the holiness of the land is on a lower level. Thank God today that most of the Jews in the world have returned to the land of Israel, that the land of Israel is on a higher level today. And as the Chatam Sofer writes, even the greatest of rabbis should work the land and work for a living. That is the ideology of Torah v'Avodah in the land of Israel. Nevertheless, let us learn Ein Ayah and understand where Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is living during a period of Galut, how to understand his opinion that he separates himself from the physical world, left his wife, and just learns Torah, doesn't even wear clothing. Rav Kook writes as follows, paragraph Aleph. Kishigiu limarom hitaluta sichlit. When a person gets to a high spiritual understanding. Kvar lo aita asviva shebebet hamidrash mikubelet l'umat hazohar hagadol shel mechkereim v'deoteim hanisaot. And here, are we on?
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me. Okay, let's see what happened.
He's not muted, but we don't hear. It's weird.
I'm not muted.
Can't hear it.
You don't hear me?
No. Maybe it's a problem with the microphone? It doesn't say mute.
You know what? It doesn't say mute. Let me use my earphones. Maybe we'll try this. Do you hear me now? Tzvia, do you hear me? Still can't hear me. Okay. How do we do this? What? Okay, that's a good idea. So we will continue. Okay. We're back. Do you hear me now?
Just to start video.
Yeah, we don't see you.
Oh, yeah. Now you see me. Okay.
It's dark. Just make sure you don't.
Say, turn off that light, please. Okay. So we are talking about. So Rav Kook is writing that when Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was on such a high level that even the Beit Midrash wasn't holy enough for him. And it could not hold his Zohar. Rav Kook is not by coincidence, is purposely using the word of Zohar, which is the Kabbalistic teachings of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And also Rav Kook stresses that Zohar is not mysticism. It's not irrational. He calls their Torah mechkareihem, their studies, videotehem, and their ideas. In other words, there is a very high level where a person, like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, cannot be held in the kelim, in the vessels of the physical world. This is what's called in Kabbalah Shvirata Kelim. Sometimes if something is just too overpowering, like when boiling water, you put boiling water in a glass, how does it break the glass? Because it expands. And the glass cannot, so too, the Beit Midrash was not able to hold the Torah of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Ad she'atzat Hashem haita ot, until it was really, we know the Romans who forced Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai to, what happened to my tape recorder? Hold on. Here we go. Are we still on? Yeah.
Are you recording all your lectures?
Yes. It was the Romans who forced Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai to go to the cave. But Rav Kook is explaining that was the Romans, as everything in the world, were the messengers of God, because God wanted him to leave the Beit Midrash to go to a more separate place. They were on a level that they should totally separate themselves from society. Because they are already surpassed society. It's like, even though we just said 2 minutes ago, that the ideal world in the end is Tchiyat HaMetim, where our souls will return to our bodies in this world. Nevertheless, there is that in-between stage after a person dies, where he goes to the world to come, Olam HaNeshamot. Now, if a person is in Olam HaNeshamot, he's not bound by time, he doesn't have to eat, he doesn't have to sleep. And a person like that is living on a different level. And he therefore has no patience for this world, and he can't even understand this world. And that is why Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, when he left the cave, he and his son started burning up everything that they saw. Why? Because they couldn't even understand. They didn't have patience or tolerance for the physical world. They were already on the level of the world to come. But God was not happy. And he said, Lo achriv olami atzatem? You left the cave to destroy my world? What, you think that God makes mistakes? Go back to the cave. Who needs you? And that punishment very clearly is telling them that as long as you are in this world, you have to play with the ground rules. The Torah was given to human beings, not to angels. And human beings need to eat and drink and to sleep. And we need guidelines, what to wear, what not to wear, what to say, what not to say. And basically, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai could not understand this world anymore. And that is why he was burning things up. Okay, paragraph bet. Oh, I can't go into the share screen from here, can I?
Okay. Very,
no, I can't.
Try it.
Yeah? No, you have to... Yeah, can you go over there and click on Svea? And it'll say to make me a co-host. Okay, I don't want to waste time. Well, I'll read orally paragraph bet. Al ken tashum b'ma'arta. So there, then they went and they hid in the cave. B'makom she'amon ha'chayim im kol dimyonotehem lo yuchlu lahagia lehem lahafriyam. Because when they were in the cave, they will not be bothered anymore by society or by the physical world. Tzvia, click on Tzvia Shvat in Manage Participants and make me make Tzvia Shvat a co-host.
I just allow participants to share a screen, that's all.
Okay. Here we go. But I don't have that. No, you have to. You have to put on the share screen
but
there.
You can find it, but you sent to me in Spanish.
Oh, just do it there. It's easier.
It's just as easy here. I'll get. It's just as easy here. You got to. 1 second. Go into this.
Is it your call, Shama?
All right. Do you want to find it? But you sent me.
Okay. We'll just continue in the meantime.
But you sent me.
No. So just do it there. Okay. Here we go. So Rav Kook continues. Shelo hayta yechola klal latzeit zakayit b'mishpatam. The physical world could not come out innocent on the level according to the judgment of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. No, here we go. Mitzad ha-tviyot ha-musariyot ha-sichliyot ha-yoter el-yonot. And do you see me?
Yeah.
Okay.
We see you and we also see the tea.
Great. So we'll continue. So now you understand why Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, when he left the cave, what did he say? He said, Ozvim chaye olam v'oskim b'chaye sha'ah. He was in the mindset of the world to come. So we can understand Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, but we can also understand God when he was angry at Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Now what happens next? Al ken aita parnasatam, paragraph gimel. Why did God davka al yedei nes? God wanted, he could have had the wife bring them food, have somebody bring them food, but he wanted to do it miraculously, to show that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is not part of this world. Umi'ilan charuv, davka why a carob tree? Shetchunat mata'o ba'olam ba'kvar al yedei de'am yushevet shela'avat ha'klal. The idea of the carob tree is the idea of the communal, of the altruistic. Ba'ofen musari elyon, the highest level of ideals. Bitor chova shela yosher amuskal lintoa bishvil sheyenu adorot abaim. Ki hechi denati li avotai. Rav Kook here is referring to the Gemara in Masechet Ta'anit, which we have underneath because of the technical problems. Tzvia, can you please scroll down? We won't see it inside. In source number 2, the Gemara tells the story of Choni Ma'agel, that famous Choni. Dafka, we have a big storm today, he'd be happy. And he, to make a long story short, he's the Jewish Rip Van Winkle, and he slept for 70 years. And what happened was, before he went to sleep, he saw somebody planting a carob tree, and he said, when will this carob tree produce fruit? The guy said, well, it might take 70 years. And Choni Ma'agel says, well, you realize you probably will not benefit from the fruit. And the man says, true. But just like my grandfather planted trees that I benefit from, so do I plant trees that my child will benefit and my grandchildren will benefit from. In other words, the carob tree, says Rav Kook, symbolizes altruism. That even when a person eats or drinks or plants trees, he can do it for a spiritual, ideological reason. And that is, that reminds us, Tzvia, can you please scroll down to source number 4? Here's Chazal tell us in the Midrash Tanhuma, where the Midrash starts out by saying, a little further down, please. The Midrash says that if we want to be godly, we should copy God's actions. We spoke about this once, how if you want to come close to God, if God is physical like this cup and I want to come closer, I could get physically close. But if God doesn't have a body, the way to get physically close, the way to get close is to be similar, right? When you see a forgery, it's similar to the original. So when we want to get close to a non-physical God, the way is to be similar to him. How are we similar to him? Well, first of all, Mahu Rachum, Mafatar Rachum. God has 13 traits. He is merciful and kind, etc., etc. So we have to be merciful and kind, etc., etc. But the Midrash says that just like God, the first thing he did in the Garden of Eden was that he planted trees, so too, when you go into the land of Israel, you plant trees. What's the moral of the story? Midrash Tanchuma says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, source 4, Israel. God says to the people of Israel, Lamdu mimeni, again, copy God. Imitati Odei, copy God. Kviyachol ani tzarich, did I need the world? Did I need the Garden of Eden? Why did I create the world? Out of altruism, to give to you. Shene'emar vayita Hashem Elokim gan be'eden mikedem. God planted for us, so too we should plant for other people. Now here is a very important point. Why fruit and not vegetables? And why in Eretz Yisrael and not in Chutz La'aretz? Here the Rivash in Source 5, a beautiful Rivash that we mentioned once, but it's always good to review. The Rivash was a student of the Ramban. He lived about 700 years ago. And he was asked, why is the mitzvah of living and settling the land of Israel on a higher level than other mitzvot, on a higher level than Shabbat or Brit Milah or blowing shofar? And he answers, source number 5, Aval Yishuv Eretz Yisrael eina mitzvah l'sha'ata. It is not a temporary mitzvah where you put on tefillin for a half hour and you take it off, or you shake a lulav, after 10 seconds you're finished. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is not a temporary mitzvah. Ela mitzvah mitkayemet le'olam hi. When you plant a tree in Eretz Yisrael, you know that there are olive trees in Hebron from 3,000 years ago, from about the time of Avram Avinu. Olive trees can last thousands of years. U'mitzvah v'toelati l'chol Yisrael. And not only that, the Rivash is referring here to buying land. When a person buys land, you buy a house in Eretz Yisrael. That is taking the land away from the goyim, shelo tishtaka Eretz kedusha biyad tmeim, ve'ein lemeidim mimena l'shar mitzvot. That's why living and settling in Israel is at a higher level than other mitzvot. Why, explains the Rivash? Because you're not just doing it for yourself, you're doing it for all of Israel. And you're not just doing it for your generation, but you're doing it for all generations. Right? When a person makes Aliyah, is one of the things that I thought about when I made Aliyah. When a person makes Aliyah, he is moving his family tree to its final destination. And there's almost nothing that a person can do today that will have ramifications 1,000 years from now. But when a person makes Aliyah, his grandchildren are going to be here, his great-great-grandchildren are going to be here, and that is a historical statement. I always tell my students that any Jew who's going to be around in Yemot HaMashiach is going to have one great-grandmother and great-grandfather who had the guts to make Aliyah. And that is a historic decision. The same thing when you buy land in Eretz Yisrael or when you settle in Yehuda v'Shomron. We are deciding the borders of the state of Israel, not just for ourselves, but for all the nation, and not just for our generation, but for all generations. And that is why, says the Rivash, that the mitzvah of settling the land of Israel is at a higher level than other mitzvot. Now we understand why fruit and not vegetables. Because when you plant vegetables, every year you have to plant new cucumbers. But when you plant a tree, that tree is going to be around for generations. The same reason, why does it say to be godly, you have to plant trees in the land of Israel? Again, trees and not vegetables. In the land of Israel and not in Riverdale, New York. Because our great-great-grandchildren will not be in New York. They will be here in the land of Israel. And this is an act of permanence. And that is the symbolism of the carob tree. Tzvia, please go back to the top source. And so what is the idea of the carob tree? The carob tree is where Choni HaMa'agel is pointing out that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is not living in the physical world. He is living in, as if in the world to come. And that's why his food and his water have to come by miracles. And that is also why they take off their clothing. Please go down to paragraph Dalid, where it says, Al kenu yoter karov lasichliyut anisaot shel ele gedolei olam hamekaplim et hatova yoter el yona shel adorot. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is taking the essence of eternity. Eternal ideas are not really part of the physical world. He is connecting with eternity. And even his physical world, the carob tree, symbolizes that eternity, which will grow fruit only in 70 years, or maybe in 70 years. And what regarding the clothing? The last remnant that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and his son had of being part of society was wearing clothing. You wear clothing not for yourself, but for the other guy, so he shouldn't see you. The fact that they took off their clothing and they had to cover up themselves, because you can't learn Torah without covering yourself up, so they covered themselves with sand. But you can't live a life in sand. That is not so sociologically acceptable. And therefore, that is the symbolism of taking off the clothing. Mishalchi manayu v'avu yatviat savarayu b'chala. So they sat up to their neck in sand, kula yoma garsi, and they learned Torah all day. But again, that is not the ideal life for normal people. That is just a selective few, and for sure it's not the ideal life in Eretz Yisrael, where even the greatest tzaddikim always work the land. I'll just mention the Chatam Sofer, who mentions Boaz. Boaz, if you remember from Megillat Rut, he, according to Chazal, is a shofet. He is that of the Sanhedrin, Ivtsan. And if, so why is he working in the field at night? That's where he meets Ruth, in the field, working in the fields at night. Well, he can't work during the day, because that's where he is fulfilling his rabbinic job, in the Sanhedrin. So, I guess he has to work at night. No. Why? How do I know he doesn't have to work for a living at night? Because he's a millionaire. All of the fields belong to Boaz. The workers work for Boaz. The poor people take their leket, shikha, and peah from Boaz. So if he's wealthy, and he doesn't need the money, and he's not working for a job, so why is he working at night in the fields? Answers the Chatam Sofer, because in Eretz Yisrael, we work, our work is spiritual. And as we saw in Rav Kook and Ma'amarei Re'iyah that we read in sources 6 and 7, that is the beauty of Eretz Yisrael, where even a Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai doesn't have to separate himself from the physical world. And that's why all of the heroes of the Jewish people in the Tanakh, David HaMelech, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they were all farmers, they were all shepherds, they worked the land, they all served in the army, because here, in the Holy Land, you don't have to separate yourself from the physical world, and that is where we are at today, now that the Jewish people are back in the land of Israel, and that is the writings of Rav Kook from after he made Aliyah. And